The Garden Against Time, In Search of a Common Paradise, written and read by Olivia Lang. To the Gardeners, and in memory of Pauline Craig. Chapter 1. A Door in the Wall. I have a dream sometimes, not often. I dream that I'm in a house and discover a door I didn't know was there. It opens into an unexpected garden, and for a weightless moment, I find myself inhabiting new territory, flush with potential. Maybe there are steps down to a pond, or a statue surrounded by fallen leaves. It is never tidy, always beguilingly overgrown, with the corresponding sense of hidden riches. What might grow here? What rare peonies, irises, roses will I find? I wake with the sense that a too tight joint has loosened, and that everything runs fluent with new life. For most of the years that I have had this dream, I didn't have a garden of my own. I came to home ownership late, renting until I was 40 and only rarely in flats with outdoor space. The first of these temporary gardens was in Brighton. It was so narrow I could almost touch both fences at once, dropping away over the crest of the downs in three precipitous terraces, culminating in a greenhouse with a rampant grapevine, inhabited by a golden-eyed toad. I planted calendula there, pot marigold, which according to the 16th century herbalist Gerard, would strengthen and comfort the heart very much. I was training to be a herbalist, and my head was full of plants, an entanglement of natural forms. The study of botany was an education in looking. It made the ordinary world more intricate and finely detailed, as if I had acquired a magnifying glass that trebled the eye's capacity. Each plant was so interwoven into human history that to study it was to tumble down a conduit through time. The wild marigold is like unto the single garden marigold, but altogether lesser, and the whole plant perisheth at the first approach of winter, and recovereth itself again by falling of the seed. In Cambridge a decade later, I planted salvias and broom, and remade the stinking pond, which in the spring was full of newts, swimming to the surface to exhale a silver ball of air. I lived on short-term contracts, with black mould on the walls, but the gardens made me feel permanent, or maybe instead brought me to terms with transience. What I loved, aside from the work of making, was the self-forgetfulness of the labour, the immersion in a kind of trance of attention that was as unlike daily thinking as dream logic is to waking. Time stopped, or rather swept me up with it. In my 20s, I'd read a list of rules for being, and was so impressed that I copied them into my little black notebook, which in those days was full of aphorisms and advice about how to be a person. The rule I liked best stated that it is always worth making a garden, no matter how temporary your stay. Perhaps they wouldn't last, but wasn't it better to go on like Johnny Appleseed, leaving drafts of pollen in your wake? Each of these gardens was a way of making myself at home, but all the same I longed for a permanent space of my own, more each time a landlord ended a contract and sold off the space that so evidently wasn't mine. I'd wanted it since childhood, even more painfully than I wanted a house. Love aside, it was the most consistent and consuming of all my desires. And as it happened, the one thing brought the other into my life, a surge of good fortune I still can't quite believe. In my 40s, I met, fell in love with, and soon married a Cambridge don, an inordinately clever, shy, and affectionate man. Ian was much older than me, and lived in a terraced house that was filled from floor to ceiling with